Welcome to part two of the two-part Dry Roasted Peanuts reunion special. You're listening to Making It Make Sense, the podcast from Real Fear Records. Thank you to everybody who reached out to us about part one. This conversation was a lot of fun to make, and we're all very glad to have had the opportunity to make it. I hope you enjoy this concluding part, which will start now.
Dry Roasted Peanuts, retrospective, 3-4 years on. What is everybody doing musically right now? I'll go last.
I finished a music course. I'm doing a master's.
Saw your recital, music. By the way, Chris.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Touch of class. Touch of class, man. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Well done.
And I've also been very lucky to have been able to work with a lot of people ever since then, and recording a few bits and doing gigs and, you know, working as a musician, basically.
Yeah. What's going on with Apenham at the moment? You mentioned earlier you guys did a song with Missing.
Yeah, we're just writing new tunes as much as we can, but, you know, COVID has slowed a lot of things down for everyone, so we're, you know, trying to piece together some tunes to record in the next whenever.
Yeah.
And how's the pandemic been for you?
Genuinely, like, the worst thing that you could ever imagine.
Really?
Jesus.
Yeah, it's just, you
sorry
know,
to hear that.
Well, no, like as in, you know, we're tipping away through it now, but it was just like, you couldn't, like, I was busy all the time playing gigs, so it was kind of ridiculous when all that stuff got taken away.
And it's probably
like,
so.
I was one of those people, I was like, yeah, look, we'll be out of this, you know, soon enough, and it's like, here we still are.
You think it's harder as well because you're a drummer? Like, because I think, like, say, for example, I've done, like, exchanged a couple of bits with a couple of people here at the lockdown, and because I'm pretty much just exclusively doing vocals, like, it's really no big deal to get a demo of someone, lay some vocals on and send it back.
Yeah.
But is it more difficult with drums? I bet it is.
Well, I just, like...
Probably not for someone of your ability, but...
I have a lot more of the gear now, but when we were landed in it, and it was kind of like, right, you need to do all this for college now. That was a great distraction from everything, but it was just kind of like, when you're, like, especially I think from the perspective of finishing a music degree, coming out into, like, the pandemic was a bit of a, like, you know, it could have been much worse, but it was... John, it was just kind of like, shite, where do we go now?
What's your plans for post-pandemic, Chris?
Try and get...
My favourite genre.
Try and get the whole show back on the road a bit better than before.
What have you been up to in the last 4 years, however long, since we broke off, JJ?
Yeah, as I said, the musical career really took a sharp dive when I started dressing up as kind of my main musical output. But I don't know, I was just kind of, because when we were doing stuff, it was fairly high involvement and it was good and we were kind of regularly gigging and stuff like that. And like everything else that I'm kind of in now at the moment, it's kind of like...
here and there.
It's kind of here and there, and like it'll pick up and it'll be like kind of busy for like a month or two and then it'll kind of drop off again. And then I kind of started doing my own stuff, but I'm my own worst enemy when it comes to that, because I might go hard at something for like a month and do like a song and put it out, then I just won't touch it again. Like, I, after that stream that I did a couple of weeks ago, months ago now at this point,
it was very good, by the way. I was at that.
That was a great stream. I love it.
Thank you.
That was so good. That was really good. And that's
really enjoyed that.
That's not an easy thing to pull off.
Yeah, do you know what? It took so much fucking time.
That's a live performance, but also, like, it's one thing to go up on stage and play in front of people, but to organize a whole stream and to make sure everything works correctly.
Yeah.
Hats off to you for that, man. That was really impressive.
Well, like, I genuinely haven't touched anything musical since, like, because it was just kind of an element of kind of burnout where it was like, right, well, this took so much to get off the ground. And I, to be honest with you, all that collaboration stuff and kind of doing stuff like via email and stuff was great for a while, but now it's kind of just, I feel it's kind of reached its course a little bit. Like, you just kind of want to do the thing where you go into a room with someone.
Yeah.
And just like, here's an idea and let's kind of riff off this for a while.
Well, that's what makes it fun.
Yeah.
That's why you do it, you know, ultimately.
Yeah, absolutely.
Music's communication. That's what music is at the end of the day. It's communication. And
funny you should say that.
Do the communication part of it, it becomes really different.
Yeah.
I had PT up to visit me in Dublin there recently. I'm sure there's a bit of a gathering at my house, and maybe went on into the second day, and like me and PT got the guitars out. We were sitting at the back. We're having like a country / trad jam on the guitars, and it just worked. It worked so well. Yeah. And it made me realize how much I've been missing, like, because obviously I'll come back to this in a bit, but like I've been doing a couple of things piecemeal with people, just over sending things over a messenger and whatnot. But like, man, like we were just it's so cliched, but like the chemistry was unbelievable. Chemistry is unbelievable. And just like that experience of being with someone, and especially, I suppose, because me and PT are, you know each other so long, but like, because we like a lot of the same kind of thing. And it's far from the first song we played together. Mm. When you know that you can like go out, you're playing something together, you know you can take it a certain direction, and that the other person is just going to follow along perfectly. The communication is in the music itself.
Mm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's no need to signal anything to each other verbally or non-verbally. It's just pure symbiosis.
And if you're trying to find out if somebody likes something, you can find it out there and then. Rather than over email 2 days later.
And it's like, it's so kind of organic. It's like, again, it sounds so cliche, but it's true. Like, it's so organic. Like, you don't like think to yourself, okay, I'm gonna go quiet here and do an arpeggio thing based on the progression you've been playing. Yeah. You don't even think that to yourself. It just happens, and like, they go with it.
Because like, even with the online collaboration, there's that kind of weird thing as well where, if someone sends you over like a clip of them playing like a riff or something like that, you kind of feel obliged then to use it, because you're like, well, fuck, he's after now spending time at this, and like setting up the rig and like doing everything.
And you don't want to be nitpicky. Like, if there's like little things, and it's like, you've already sent this thing back and forth to each other like 3 or 4 times.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, okay, well, like, honestly, I would still like this bit to be a little bit higher. I would still like the EQ to be a little bit, you know, I'd like to maybe the low ends to be a little more. But it's like you've sent it back and forth 3 or 4 fucking times. Whereas if you were like just together in the room,
it'd be like a 5-minute conversation and it'd be done. Like,
And you would even just be able to sense the vibe from each other.
So
what are the projects that you're involved with at the moment, JJ?
See, as I said, like, the things kind of come and go. Like, it's, I think at the moment
we've been fortunate to work with a lot of the same projects ever since as well.
Myself and Chris kind of came as a package deal.
Yeah, we still are a package deal.
Yeah, you were playing with Ghost King Is Dead a lot.
Laura Duff quite a lot.
Laura has new music coming, actually. We recorded we recorded an EP last summer. And
I always liked her music. I always thought it was very haunting. Yeah, and
very good, very good.
Wait for the next stuff.
I will say, it sounded great now, in fairness. Not to be like blowing smoke or anything like that, but this is actually sounding very nice.
We did a gig with Alison Sweeney.
That was a good crack, Monday was down there. But like, other than that, then it's just like, we're doing a Messing album, which is
music to my ears, man.
This has been in the works now for a long time, because Donna had the great idea to break the Guinness World Record for the amount of collaborators on one album, and then that actually turned out to be like really high. So then he was just like, okay, let's just get as many people as we can to collaborate on all the songs. So every song has about like 4 different features, but trying to get that many people to come back with stuff during a pandemic to put it all together is just impossible.
It's like you're trying to do that, it's like you're trying to do like Feed the World or something.
Yeah, basically. We were like, it'd be great if we could get all these people in one room. That would be fucking hilarious.
Like, but Bob Dylan there looking bored.
Yeah, but like, that's a great creative outlet, because it's just being really fucking stupid with things. Like the song that Chris was on about there, the Messing and Apenum collaboration, is a metal song about air codes. So like, And like the vocal,
like, it's like the Linkin Park Jay-Z album.
It is.
You
like,
tell me it's got like deathcore better. Vocals on it.
Yeah, like it's got this big breakdown where it's like building up into like a screamo thing, but the screamo is just done like going into a microphone going.
What's your favorite air code? What's the coolest air code?
Yeah, we actually went through this because I think the song kind of got more legs behind it there because Donna recently moved. And his air code is fucking phenomenal.
His air code. Okay. Let's not dox. We're not going to dox tell, Donna on the podcast.
But he drop has the like, air code.
But like,
everybody drop their air codes right now.
Right. Everyone just do it.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny, man. Good. I'm really glad to hear that. I'm assuming the album is going to be called something like, you know, Jack Charlton's favorite. Pasty or something.
Probably something like that, yeah. Like Hillel Slovak versus the Cavan County Board.
I will say, when I recorded the drums for that song, I did it here from my house. It was a Thursday evening and it was getting late. And I was sitting in here, like, thrashing away. Like, it was a loud song. And when I'd finished doing it, a car pulled up at the end of the driveway. And a guy came out and walked up my driveway. And I was like, oh, fuck, what's going on here? Came up to the door and he was just like, yeah, I'm just moved here from Pennsylvania. I was walking around and I heard you. Do you want a jam?
Oh, that's nice.
Really?
It was like incredible. I was like.
Was he good?
We haven't met up yet because of pandemics and all that kind of stuff. But and being busy. But yeah, it was just.
That's good.
I was like, this is mad. Yeah.
What have you been up to, Mark, since the band broke up?
Look, it's no one's business, frankly, what I do when I'm not on the mic. well, right, yeah, I work, I have a job. I do my job.
we'll have a few pints on a Friday evening.
Yeah, I might have a few pints on Friday evening. I might put a line on the horses. I might put a line on the nags of a weekend. And that's enough for me, you know. Musically, I've put out like three or four silly little songs on SoundCloud. That's it. I found it.
All of which were very good.
They were very good.
Yeah, very enjoyable.
Thank you very much. I found it extremely, extremely, extremely difficult to motivate myself to make any music. But myself and JJ were bouncing a couple of tracks back and forth, and I would like to take this opportunity to ambush JJ publicly and and say, what the fuck is going? What the fuck is up?
Hey, JJ,
what's good?
I just completely fell off on my side of the thing. Yeah. Where
no, we'll look. We gotta look.
We'll okay. Give it back because
I recognize I could have done this privately over Messenger, but
you feel like on a podcast is the best time.
I feel like public accountability is the only way to get this show back in the room.
I wanted to make him sweat a little bit.
But okay, to be honest, we did that one song. You know, we called it the Pond Song. That's got legs.
Yeah, it's a good song. Yeah,
that's a good song. That's got legs. Yeah. I enjoyed making that with you. I thought that was really good. I'm glad we did that. I think at the very least we could drop that. I mean, we can do maybe another couple of songs. Why the hell not? What do you think? I mean, look, you're on record here now, and I will remind you that you're under oath.
Oh, like I love nothing more than putting out a track and getting my ego boosted off the back of someone else doing like their hard graft. Which is the vocal singing. Work.
Oh, please.
And the lyrics.
I'm the one doing the hard graft by like taking an hour to like write some bullshit and sing it over the fucking song.
But I'm just sitting there with a little, like an Ableton push, just making little beep boops. And I'm having a great time.
I can't fucking do it. I've been using Ableton for like 4 years now. And I still like, I still, every time I open it up, it's like the first time I've used it. It's like the first time I've used it. I'm so bad at it. Look, let's get back on that. I feel so bad because like me and Donna were met a few trees together and they were so fucking good. But like, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's the pandemic or what. Well, I know what it is for me. I feel so hopeless about ever getting back into music. And it's a me problem and it's something that I have to deal with. I spend all my time quietly panicking about how this is slipping away from me. And the longer I leave it go, the harder it's going to be able to get back into this.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can I just jump in on that one? Because
is that related? Are you guys relating to that? Is that?
Yeah, definitely.
No,
yeah,
I get that one. But I think there's this thing about, I don't know, fetishization of being young and being good as a performer. But it's not true because I think for the most part you can be a good artist when you're older. Like
there is no time limit.
There's no time limit. Leonard Cohen didn't do his best music until he was in his 30s or so.
But I think
he didn't
the problem
release Hallelujah until he was 50.
But I get deeper and deeper into this life that I'm living now.
Mm.
Bullshit.
Yeah.
Really, it's not what I want. It's never what I wanted. And the more used I get to this, the more like I am coming to a point where I'm resigning myself to this.
Yeah.
And I don't really give a fuck about like, you know, like being in a fucking career or whatever and having, you know, doing things the way, like a respectable way. Like, I don't really give a fuck about that, but it's just so hard.
To not do that.
It's harder and harder. It's really hard to not do that because I'm terrified. I don't want to be embarrassing.
Yeah.
I don't want to be embarrassing because it takes such. Yeah. But the struggle for me is I can't decide because I can't decide which is the courageous thing to do.
Yeah.
And like which is the authentic thing to do. Because on the one hand, I think, okay, well, you know, it takes courage and it takes strength to just try and get ahead, try and make a good foundation for yourself in the world. Make the most of the opportunities that say, like, my parents worked so hard for me to have. That's courageous as far as I'm concerned. But then really it would take so much courage to sack that off and like do what I feel is really authentic for me to do.
Yeah.
We got hella deep there. Yeah. We got way too deep there. But the problem is I know what I really want to do and what makes me feel alive and what I love doing is being creative and making music, but it's just so fucking hard.
You know what?
It's very hard to tap into that. It's so hard to find that part of myself again. And I feel terrible. I feel terrible because I mean, obviously there's that thing, the stuff that me and you were working on, JD, the stuff that me and Donna were working on, which had serious legs. But like me and like Andy Killian and I were working on this track and this shit slaps. And I haven't fucking texted him about it in like 3 months. And I feel terrible. But I don't even know now if I were even to revisit it and to finish it off. I feel like if I were to get back onto him and say, listen, I finished this off, like, he's probably going to be like, well, fuck this guy. Like, how am I supposed to have a proper working relationship, a proper creative relationship with this person when, like, I can't rely on them to even finish a demo?
I think it's a good point.
I don't hear from this guy from fucking 2 or 3 months.
It's a good point because something that I always particularly respected about you, Chris, was that you were always very, very professional about how you showed up to gigs and there was never any problems. You're always just, you know, you performed every time, the peak of your abilities.
To know about the being nice.
Are you saying this to offset the start of the podcast where we were just ragging on
people? I will say,
well, that's just for my own records, you know.
Let's get that
in case I need to blackmail anyone, but go on.
Okay.
I will say, Mark, like on the kind of collaboration thing, like I think all of us here definitely have message conversations from way back where there was things exchanged, and I think like from myself, from seeing it as a drum teacher the last few months, the amount of disenfranchisement I've seen from music and all that stuff, like especially like not even people our age, but people older than us, people younger than us, like 12-year-olds, 13-year-olds, teenagers, the amount of disenfranchisement I've seen is crazy. I don't think anyone's going to hold a grudge after all this, being like, oh, sorry, I never got back to you about that. Because as far as I'm concerned, everyone is getting through all of this somehow.
I think that's a very fair thriving point.
Musically in this, fair fucks to you. If you're not, fair fucks to you. Okay,
the lapsing on the collaborations thing panics me so much is because it feeds into this overarching thing.
Yeah,
me like I'm very seriously considering the possibility that I would just never really I barely even like play music for my own enjoyment anymore. And I know it's not because I don't want to.
Yeah.
It's not because I don't enjoy it. It's something like,
but when
there's an anxiety there.
Yeah. When you send your creative output to somebody, maybe at the moment, and they don't really get back to you, that is kind of like, you know, the fuck, man.
I don't take that personal.
Yeah.
But I feel like I'm the one not holding up my end to the bargain in most of these things.
No, definitely not. I think, you know, it's a case of maybe changing that one thing that you're doing, or, you know, taking control. I sound like a horoscope now or something like that. But like, you know, it is that kind of stuff. It's just changing something, taking it back, you know, finding what it is that you enjoyed about it in the first place, which you will discover. What I will also say on that is that, like, if you idolize a certain musician or a certain person, like, be it somebody on Instagram or whatever, like, what I kind of came to the realization of ages ago is, like, a lot of the guys that I'm looking up to online, especially at the moment, who I'm seeing all the time or creating content, they're all in their 40s, 50s. Yeah. And that's not an insult or trying to degrade that, but, like, they've been grafting for the last 30 years.
Yeah.
And they're at a point where they're, like, well-respected in their instrument. Yeah. There's very few people our age that are, like, fully formed artists that have it all fucking figured out and have a home studio built in their house.
That's the point, because I do have this idea that, like, if I leave, like, my 20s go by without really getting stuck back into it, I'll have lost this, like, I'll have missed out on this, like, crucial period in my life where I have this kind of artistic vitality. But that's probably complete bullshit, and it's probably an insult to all the people older than that who are, like, doing really worthwhile.
If you allow yourself to believe that, then it's a pity.
It's going
to
happen, like,
it's not the case. It's not the case.
Yeah.
And
I think
you look at, you know, any of the really big bands in the world at the moment, or, you know, they're all a bit older and they all have other shit on. But, you know, it's just it's the graft that you put in and the ups and downs along the way.
Yeah, I think you have to get into good habits as well.
I totally get that, Chris.
That's true.
I think life is a lot longer than you think it is when you're 18, 19. And so many greats, really, like, if you're talking about great artists, apart from those that are just musical, like Thomas Hardy and Monet, they didn't do their best work until they were in their 60s, 70s. You know,
yeah,
I don't
sure,
think
but
it's...
I think Tom Hardy was like 81.
Well, I don't mean Tom Hardy, the actor. What have I been doing in the last 2 years, 3 years? So right after college, I went to France for a year. Then I came back, I was living in Dublin. And then I started doing a load of songs on GarageBand. And that's been the main thing I've been doing for the last while.
They're fucking good too.
They've been good songs.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're really good.
Thank you.
Shout out Scenic.
But I've been doing those a lot, which are a lot of fun because I sort of stopped doing music the whole time after the band broke up for about a year. Because I couldn't figure out how to do it or what in like what way it would make sense for me to do it. Because I think it was you, JJ, that started doing music first. Started doing solo music. And I thought that was pretty cool. So I kind of copied that, but just not the just not the actual music. The style of music I copied. But so that's been fun. So I'm gonna do a new thing maybe September or so. And hopefully Chris will be doing the drums on that if I get it at some point. But
absolutely.
But that's the crack with that one. But yeah, no, it is hard to stay doing it though, and to get like, because I've been trying to get a band together But over pandemic, it's just been so difficult to find actual people who are willing to meet up in person.
Yeah, it's nearly impossible. Like, yeah,
when there's no like stability in being able to plan things, which there really isn't for the last long time, it's just a nightmare.
Yeah. People aren't inclined to put time into something where they're like,
I think,
well,
what you need is you need to go to one of the anti-mask rallies and bring your guitar and see like who's up for a jam.
Yeah. They're famously great musicians, the
Yeah.
And they are, they're mad for it.
There, some of those people are, yeah, there are some great musicians in that.
I mean, Scally for one.
Can we just say one thing about Scally? And we don't need to, like, you can leave this in, it doesn't need to be cut. But the one gig that we played with him, we were on after, and he trashed
the fucking
stage.
Yeah,
we did. He trashed
the fuck.
We played in Limerick in the library. Oh, was it not Pharmacia?
No, it was in the library. Yeah, yeah.
We never played in Pharmacia.
He trashed the fucking stage.
So Dylan Flynn went on very first.
Was that Dylan?
That was Dylan Flynn. Oh, he's still doing hella bits.
He is, yeah.
He's doing some hella bits, yeah.
But yeah, fucking Scally like trashed the stage and like knocked the drums over and stuff like that. And we were like, come here, like we've to play there. And he was like, oh, sorry, lads, didn't realize we were closing.
Well, you thought you were closing after one fella went on with the acoustic guitar. You thought you're,
and it was like fucking half.
That's rock and roll. That's rock. Yeah, yeah. It's like it's
what? What you say? Say that again.
Sorry, Rob has been texting me the whole time. I think the two guys are doing pretty well. Like, I don't think. Whoa! You can't say that.
You know, okay. JJ's eye is like that usually, man. Like, that's just, you can't really be saying things like that.
Yeah.
That's a medical thing.
It's like, wow, that is low even for you.
I saw a guy today wearing a t-shirt. You know the way people get t-shirts made and it's the album cover from London Calling by The Clash, but it's not London Calling by The Clash. Like, they use the style where it's like,
yeah.
He had one of those t-shirts, but it was like Luke Kelly. And it was fucking brilliant.
I saw one of those, Chris, but it was in a shop in Lahinchshire. And it said, I fought the lawn, but the lawn won.
That reminds me of when we were coming out with our first EP and we used to make loads of memes. And some more tasteful than others. We had, so we did like the obligatory like American Psycho one, where he's like standing next, he's in his like see-through Macintosh and he's like standing next to the hi-fi and he's like,
yeah,
you like Dry Roast of Peanuts? When Milk came out in 2016 it was like so people have compared them to Foals, but I think Marco Carnegie's got a much more wry, bitter sense of humor. Anyway, yeah, when Sometimes I Stay In, Sometimes I'll Go Out came out in 2018, I thought they really hit their peak commercially and artistically. That was Milk. That was a good track.
Milk was a great track. And I think there's something there.
Milk makes me think of the time we played in the Woodford, and
that was the worst gig. I forgot
that was possibly the worst gig.
I remember that.
Rob kept, who was drumming for us in that? No, I've no idea. It was you, Chris. Sorry.
I'm sorry,
and
Chris.
I got so much grief off a Cork City taxi driver that night. It was just not needed.
About the gig?
Because obviously I was getting a spin to a gig in a taxi with my drums.
They sent
some fucker with a Merc expecting me to come out with a golf bag.
I remember one time when I lived in Limerick and I was working in a call center, I was working in Three customer care, shout out to Three, but I lived in town and I would often miss the bus out to Castletroy where the call center was, and So I'd have to get a taxi, while the taxi would be waiting, I'd often get myself a little jambon or something. Oh. And I remember one time I got a jambon, and I was eating it in your man's taxi. It was just like a dick move to start with. But he had these like kind of felt, these really nice like felt seats. Oh. And I was getting jambon. You know, when you get a jambon, it's a crusty pastry.
Terrible. So
there was flakes. There was flakes of jambon going everywhere. And we got to the call center, and I stepped out of the taxi. There was just jambon all over the seat. So I started trying to brush it off with my hand. Man, the jambon was going nowhere. It was
what would you say?
And he was like, your man was like to me, "Oh yeah, you know it's actually illegal to eat in a taxi." And I was like, all right, man.
What would you say was the eaten jambon to like crumbs of jambon ratio?
Man, it was like 50-50. It was like 50-50. I left as much jambon in the seat as I actually got into me. I went into work. Never saw him again. But,
classic.
Legend. Legend Kurt.
Yeah.
Do you know what I think our downfall? We should have done more songs about Squid. Like,
No. I tried to speak Irish today over in the Iron Islands, and no one was fucking going.
Oh, yeah. Well, forget about it. You go over there, you try to speak Irish to them, you might as well be speaking Japanese. They'll just answer you in English.
Yeah.
I remember.
Your Gaelga is not their Gaelga.
Well, I have two questions. The first question is for everybody about the best recording experience. What was their favorite experience recording? And the second question is going to be the spicy one, and that's what we're going to end on. And I'm not going to reveal what it is just yet. What's the best recording experience? Let's start, JJ.
Strangely enough, actually, when we did that recording for the second EP,
in CSM,
that was class. I think
who recorded that, by the way?
Luke Daly.
Luke Daly.
Yeah, that's right.
Shout out to Luke Daly.
And I think it came at a good time because we were very tight as a band at that point.
Yeah.
Because we did most of.
Yeah, because we laid down most of those tracks in like two or three takes.
Honestly, yeah, and it was all live. It was all just the four of us just baiting away. And
that says a lot considering I was one of the instrumentalists.
But like it was very simple. Just went in because we literally only had the day. I think the lad said maybe if we needed it to come back like a following day or something, we had it, but.
So we had everything already.
Joe, I remember about that day. Like we recorded up standing, and then we went into the booth, and like just they put it on the console. I was like, man, that sounds so good. That sounds
still does. I still listen.
Still does, yeah.
Still is. Oh, but actually, do you know what's crazy? The amount of like. Because I remember back in the day when the band was still going, you'd meet a random person and they'd be like, "Oh, what? You draw us the penis? What?" And it was always so crazy.
You're not in draw us the penis, are you?
Oh, mate.
This is in Canada. Mate.
Are you fucking in draw us the penis?
Mate, you're not in draw us the penis, are you? Oh, mate. They're still every now and then a random person.
I met someone on a boat in Paris who recognized me from that. There's this random Irish person who was out there. That's the most obscure one.
That's out there.
My ego.
But yeah, that was an excellent experience.
It was, yeah.
But yeah, that was a good one. That was fun. What about yourself, Chris?
Oh God, like as in.
I mean, there was only two.
But... I remember we did Honey and Lemons that time. That was so tight.
Yeah, that was all.
The drums
one day.
Were so tight, man.
Yeah, like that day was great. Like I haven't done many recording sessions like that where everyone is recording all the instruments together.
Yeah.
So it's great. And I just, I don't know. My answer at the moment is like any recording session I've done where I haven't had to engineer at the same time, because when I've been recording from here, there's a lot more work involved setting it up and all that.
Yeah.
Anytime I've gone into a studio in the last year and somebody else is pressing play and sorting out the fucking mics and all that, it's just like a breath of fresh air. It's like a holiday. But I find that, you know, I've been very lucky to play some great sessions with great people in the past 4 years, even more. And yeah, that's, I definitely find as I get older, they start to get a bit better, maybe.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Very ambiguous answer, but that's how I answer things.
You're very diplomatic, Chris.
Well, yeah, diplomatic, but you know, just happy to be along the ride at the same time.
Yeah, I guess for me the best experience for us recording was probably the first EP. It was myself, Mark, and Rory. Yeah. And shout out to him. He was our first drummer. He did like 2 or 3 gigs with us, and he was very good.
And he pretty much did them all out of kindness. He did them all out of the goodness of his heart. If he hadn't been such a nice guy, I don't think he would have done them.
Yeah. No, he was very nice, and he was just very, very
and so good. So
technically good. You know, he just got all of the songs. But
just fantastic musician, man.
Yeah, hope he's keeping well if he's listening. So that was a great experience. The first time we recorded at Duncan's studio in Blackwater Studios. And then
shout out Duncan.
Yeah,
shout out to Duncan. Did you guys listen to the Dunk Pod?
Dunkcast, yeah.
The Dunkcast was great. It was 2 hours of unfiltrated solid Duncan.
Duncan unleashed.
Duncan says
tried,
what he really
Duncan tried, says. Duncan tried an hour of new material.
But that was probably that was one of the better podcasts I've done so far of these. But that was a great experience. The second time when we all recorded together, we all were very, very tight, you know, and everything just
crunchy.
It was so easy, you know. There was no fucking about it.
Yeah,
I think we knew how we wanted ourselves and the songs to sound.
I don't think me and Rob yelled at each other once that day.
No, or hit each other, which is rare.
Now having those, you know, baffle screens between you probably had something to do with it.
Oh yeah, that had nothing to do with the sound.
Yeah,
that had nothing to do with the sound.
That was just for the sheer harmony of the day.
Yeah, there was just...
Well, that was a legal requirement. That was in my contract before.
Yeah, of course. Classic. Yeah.
Keep you remember away from me.
Yeah. We were well chuffed with ourselves that day.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah, that was great.
I remember before we went into the studio, we went into Centra and the girl in there said, "Are you guys in a band?"
And
I remember me and Rob, we'd be going somewhere with our guitars and people would say, "Are you guys in a band?" I would say, "No, this is my boyfriend." Rob used to hate that. Yeah.
No, I didn't.
I think it's worth. I think that one we bit. Need to. We need to mention the trolley that you used.
Oh yeah,
the gigs that trolley. What a fucking what a unit.
In our like, house, we always just had like 2 or 3. There'd always be one trolley out the back and like 2 in the living room. Just collecting trolleys like magpies.
Just kind of strewn about the place, like there was just the odd trolley in the hall or something like that as well.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't as though our house had very much room in it. Man, that house was grim.
Did we all answer that last question?
No, we didn't, Rob. You didn't ask me.
No, but I... so we all answered it. Mark, what's your take on that one?
Man,
I forgot what the question was, but what was your, where do you stand on that issue?
I'm gonna keep it 100. I'm gonna keep it 100 with y'all right now. I loved the CSM time. I also love the Duncan time. I love them all. Some of my favorite times are honestly like just up in the music department using their Macs, just laying down tracks, or even just using Audacity in the house.
I liked rehearsing there.
Yeah, in her house.
Yeah.
No, in the music department.
Oh,
not that house.
In UCC or in
UCC? In UCC, I just found this to be a very kind of...
famously well-equipped.
Inspiring kind of space.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, thank God UCC have been prioritising their funding for the music.
I remember... Do you guys remember when we got like a cease and desist? Well, not quite, but we got asked not to use that space anymore because it was just for...
Because we were rocking too... We were just rocking too much.
We were just sticking it too hard to the man and they weren't comfortable with that.
The man didn't like it.
We were told, for whatever reason, not to use it because it was making too much noise. And sometimes a lecturer would burst in while we were practicing and say, "Shut the fuck up." But I sent an email.
I would burst in like the Spanish Inquisition.
I sent an email to like the dean of the music department, with whom I thought at the time, reasonably friendly, and with links to like 2 of our songs, being like, "This is the stuff we recorded there, you know, this was..."
Like, that was going to convince him.
it just being like, this was
like he was gonna listen to Tick and be like, I cannot stand in the way of this.
But somehow after I sent that
email, I fuck with this so much.
It would be a crime to impede these young men from the truly crucial artistic work they're doing out there.
After I sent that email, somehow it was even harder to argue a case. So I think that it did work against us. Why did the band break up, JJ?
Oh no, Rob, you don't want to go.
Right. So basically, what happened was, there was this one night we were coming back. Basically, it all boiled down to Chris. So there was one night coming back from a gig where I had left. Chris was driving. I had left a Twix in the car, right? And I came back to have my post-gig Twix, and this fucker had eaten it, right? So obviously tensions were frayed. I'm already feeling a bit iffy about the whole situation going forward. And it had happened several times since. I'd never said this to you lads because I didn't really want to bring it up because I thought it was a tough issue to broach, really. But this had happened several times where Chris would be eating Twixes and he'd be stealing my Twixes. And can't really coexist in a space with someone, you know, that's going to be doing that on a regular basis.
That's
funny, then, JJ, because as far as I'm concerned, it was Chris's fault as well, but for a different reason.
I also think it was Chris's fault, yes.
Yeah,
because I remember, you know, Chris, you remember when we went down to Dungarvan for your birthday that time?
Oh, Jesus.
And I remember... Chris said to me, come here, I want you to come into my bedroom. I've got something to show you. And I went into his room. And the walls were just covered floor to ceiling with pictures of me. Like, floor to ceiling. And pictures of me that I don't remember being taken. He'd written on a lot of them. And like, I was like, oh. Chris, oh my God, I don't know. But then I had nowhere else to sleep that night.
Yeah.
So I said, Chris, I said, look, you know, I've got two beds here. We can both sleep in them. And I said, look, Chris, I already explained to you in the car on the way down that I'm not really looking for anything that serious. And Chris said, look, it's going to be fine. You just sleep in the room. I won't touch you. I won't look at you. And I was like, well, Chris, to be honest, I don't really feel comfortable with all these pictures looking down at me. And he said, I didn't put those there. And I said, Chris, I know you put those there because they've got your handwriting on them. And he said, that wasn't me, that was my brother Peter. And I said, well, Chris, I don't think that was your brother Peter either. But look, I said, by this point, you know, it's 3 a.m, I'm feeling pretty good. I've had 8 glasses of wine. I don't give a shit. So I went to sleep. I woke in the middle of the night and Chris was just like standing over me. The air was just heavy with like... desire, but also like this palpable rage. And I just got up out of there in the morning. I went back on the bus and I was so upset. I mean, I remember I met my girlfriend, we nearly broke up that day. It was so bad. And yeah, that was when I knew really that this was not viable long term.
I remember when Mark, I guess the first time, relayed that story to me, and I was really uncomfortable by the whole thing, naturally enough. Yeah. But yeah, so we've all been good and honest with that. So we so yeah, that no, that let's. Let's
so we can agree that it was Chris's fault.
I mean, 100%. I would say that I was driving all these paranoid fuckers to gigs.
Chris doing the most, like
the whole band experience from your perspective, Chris, must have been so different.
I think the long suffering Chris is. I think if anybody suffered more for this band, it was all
for the love of it.
But the only reason that we could actually do any of this was because Chris was by far the most professional of us.
Thank you.
we talk about our last ever gig?
Let's do it.
That's a great way to close everything out.
That's a good That makes thematically a good one.
Anyone who was at that gig witnessed
anyone who was at that gig got their £5 worth.
I genuinely think they witnessed one of the best rock shows.
Maybe ever.
I hate to use that word. It sounds very cliche, but you know what I mean.
It was a bit like the Clash playing in the Manchester City Hall. Everyone who went to that gig went off and started a band.
Everybody that left that gig had to get therapy.
And we had to pay for it.
It's Tuesday of Rag Week. I haven't slept in a couple of days. By the time we get out, I think the Clockworks came out before us, didn't they?
Yeah.
Clockworks played.
I remember Legends. Yeah, those guys are consummate professionals. Shout out.
Well done to the Clockworks. Great band.
Shout out to the Clockworks.
I love those guys. I've met them a number of times over the last few years at festivals, and they're just absolute legends.
Yeah, those guys are pros. Fair play to them. But so it's like Tuesday. I haven't slept in a couple of days. We go on stage. I decided it was a good idea to drink a bottle of Buckfast and a bottle of Prosecco before going on. First couple of songs go kind of okay. There's a really annoying hum coming from my signal chain. So by like the third song, I decided to just leave the guitar down. And then, as I recall, we decided to play our iconic cover of Hey. And according to my friends, halfway through the song, I sat down on the stage and just started screaming. Until the rest of you just kind of awkwardly trailed off and stopped playing.
Yeah, that did happen. Also, I had never played Hey before.
Also, that's so funny because the bass line for that song is like the main part.
Yeah, because I remember you just going like, let's fucking play Hey. And I was just like,
it's a complicated bass line and it's the main part of the song.
I like turned around and I was like doing the awkward thing where I was just like, fuck, like, okay, which one is, oh yeah, I remember that one. And then I'm like trying to play the riff, but it actually works out perfectly because it starts so slow.
Yeah, but Rob used to do that all the fucking time. We'd play a gig and Rob would be like, oh yeah, let's play this. And we'd be like, Rob, we don't know that. But by the time you're finished saying that, Rob is launched into it. That happened so many times.
I think that's
the pictures. From that gig are fucking hilarious because you just see like a sea of concern. You see like me like up there like howling or something, and you see a sea of concerned faces, and then dotted in there among the people, you see like my friends fucking losing it, like crying laughing. I fell into the crowd more than once. Chris was furious at me by the end because there's a picture of me falling back onto your drums and you've got your drumstick jammed into my back.
I wasn't furious.
Have you not seen that picture?
There's a
picture
of
Chris with his drumstick jammed into my back to stop me falling back on the drums.
Send that into the group chat. I'd love to see that.
That's good.
And then I believe, I don't remember this, but at the end, I went in this big, I was fucked. Like I was absolutely carted. And I went in this big speech at the end, this like rambling, incoherent speech.
Yeah.
And then according to my friends, one point Rob piped up on his mic and he was like, yeah, we're actually not breaking up though. We're going to keep going. And I took the mic off Rob and I dropped it. And I said, I'll have my few words. I had to apologize to the sound engineer afterwards.
There was SM58 Pavel that never worked the same after that night.
Ah, don't say that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't say that.
Okay, I didn't say it so.
But somebody else said that.
Oh, that was good. That was good. It's funny, like that was like I basically had like an emotional breakdown on stage, but like it was still one of the better gigs we did, I think.
I remember that night, amongst many of the things that happened, I remember Mark, you fell off the stage onto the ground.
Into the glass.
And everyone in the audience was shocked for a millisecond, but you sprung right back onto your feet and just kept going.
Yeah.
It was very rock and roll.
Yeah.
Was that the gig as well where you shifted that one mid-song as well. Was that that gig? That definitely happened, because I remember like having a good time and I looked down and I just went,
I don't remember that, but there are definitely pictures of me with my face very much
thematically consistent.
Someone else's face.
It was all part and parcel of it. You know, people were having a good time.
Mm. That was it, because we never knew really if we wanted to be like, we never knew if we wanted to be Scally or Yankee.
Yeah, well, we adopted this beautiful middle ground where people
inhabited a sort of liminal space between the Scally Yankee dichotomy.
Yeah.
Also, I think this was before Yankee. So.
Yeah.
Obviously, he was heavily inspired.
Of course, yeah.
I think we can claim that as a win.
Yeah. We also had the Love Buzz in their previous moniker supporting us that night as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did actually. Oh, we did.
But I'll never forget their first gig. When it was just like, and this was back when like Aidan had like short hair. It was like only the second time I'd ever met Kieran, and they fucking blew me away. They blew me away. Like what they did, like Kieran literally just had that like that little multi effects.
And boss multi effects.
So good. They were so fucking good. I remember being really blown away with them. And do you know who else was on stage that night? Brother Uncle.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
He borrowed his guitar. He still kind of does bits now. He goes under the name of Jostle. He's really good.
Yeah. I bumped into him a few times since, actually. I think he was working in the Kino for a while.
Nice fella.
Yeah, really nice guy.
Let's end this on a positive note.
We're not close to ending this. We're not fucking close to ending this.
So every so often we get messages on Instagram asking us if we're going to record again. And I'm going to submit to everybody that I am up for it. Who else? And we were close to it about a month ago. We all stuff together. So
I think yes.
I'm going to say, are we going to record anything again? Are we going to do the Peanuts roasting over an open fire Christmas album thoughts?
I think yeah. And not even that, I wouldn't even be opposed. I wouldn't even be opposed to playing a fucking gig. And I think we could have we really do not have to take this that seriously at all. We could have fun with this. We could do a messing thing.
I think the two ideas that I've had before are, definitely record a song or a few, because generally
I have a track ready for us all to jump on, man.
And once the going's good, it's very easy to just do it, because once you do one, they'll start falling out of you then fairly rapidly. And then I think if we were to do maybe one or two gigs for a charity based thing.
Yeah, good idea, because then we do something for charity, and number one, we're doing a good thing. But number two, people are like, oh, people will look at it that much more kindly. It's like, oh, they don't actually think they were a good band. They're just trying to raise money for a good cause.
No, I think we should give it a laugh. I think it'd be great fun.
I think we should fucking do it. Why not? I think we should do it. But the problem is, because when we were exchanging tracks like a month ago, Rob sent in a track and I'm listening to it and it's got a guitar track. I'm like, yeah, this is really good. I'll fuck with this. And then he's fucking singing on it.
Do you realize, Mark, that was a vocal idea?
But then how am I supposed to send something back?
Because I sent one without the vocals as well. And then you just record over that one.
Do you know the problem? You fucking listen to me right now, man. Hey, Frank Black over here.
Oh yeah, so we're not doing it.
What am I gonna fucking do with this guy? What am I gonna do with this guy? He's my sister's nephew.
That's one song, okay?
No, we're just playing it. We're playing it up to the crowd here.
I'm
up for it. Yes.
Whatever song. I don't give a shit about the song as long as I can play.
I don't care what happens to me.
We can even.
It's a cry for help.
Man, this whole podcast is you think I came on here to discuss the band? You're bugging. I came on here to air my grievances
in a very public forum.
Yeah.
It's
It's more disturbing than Bo Burnham's Inside podcast.
Definitely though, for me, yes. Just, you know, I'd love to play stuff
AJ,
like that.
Stop looking
again.
At your phone.
I'm actually, I actually have a lot of picks in my hands.
Oh, he's got a fidget. JJ's got a fidget spinning.
I'm just fidgeting, man.
Okay, so let's close that on this. For the 8-9 people who are listening, what do we want to say to them? You know, direct communication. What's the future of this project? And let me say, what is the legacy of this thing? Was this a good thing to do? Was this a misstep? Was this one of God's greatest mistakes?
What, this podcast or Dry Roasted Peanuts?
Well, Dry Roasted Peanuts.
All right, sound off.
JJ, hit me.
Do you know what now? It was a great thing to happen. And I think it gave an awful lot of other people that were kind of belting around in the scene the kind of belief there to be like, oh yeah, we can go off and do this. And like, kind of, even from the most basic thing of like not just gigging in Cork, because an awful lot of bands in Cork at the time just used to play gigs in Cork and that was it. They wouldn't go anywhere further afield. And I think it was a great thing. I think the music was good. I think the performances were good. I think the crack was good. And I think the legacy of it is pretty good. And if you were to say to people about this, I would just say to them that, you know, if you're still interested in getting that cup of coffee, maybe we should go there sometime soon. And maybe we get a scone as well.
Mm.
I'll make a cup of coffee.
Great answer.
For your head.
It will be all over TikTok.
Yeah. Chris,
if TikTok had been around when we were doing it, man,
we'd be huge.
Jesus. Come on, we could have been a TikTok.
You telling me Lovely Cans wouldn't have cleaned up on TikTok?
Oh my God, you know how hard I've tried.
I'm gonna sample that into the
podcast. Distance
pod,
myself.
My name is Mark. I'm a lovely man, and I love drinking Lovely Cans. Lovely Cans. Lovely Cans. Out in the sun with the lads, sucking booms in a bag of cans. Lovely cans. Lovely cans.
This is myself from that and a fucking documentary.
That was good, man. I want to do another documentary.
It was great.
Like the Pixies documentary where they pick up on everybody and like JJ is a magician and like I'm just homeless.
Chris is addicted to heroin. I'm a magician. JJ's playing community centers with his wife, and Rob's just lying on his bed in a wife beater.
Thinking cans of Murphy's.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So who's Chris?
You've got
Chris. It's your turn to answer. Rob's
my first. Turn.
You've got 6 minutes.
So yes, I really enjoyed playing with the band. Learned a lot about a lot of things at that point, both musically, personally. You know, in all sorts of respects, learned a lot.
Metaphysically.
Yeah, metaphysically, substantially, everything. Say to anyone who is still listening or whatever,
Chris,
thanks.
No one is fucking listening.
Yeah, but anyway, cheers for listening to the songs. And if you came to a gig, thanks for coming to a gig. And there might be a gig for you to go to again.
Trust Chris to say the nicest thing. Trust Chris to say the nicest, most mature,
the most sincere,
most, most sincere, most sensible, nicest thing ever. JJ, what JJ said was very nice as well. Let's leave it to me and Rob to say like the annoying.
Yeah, bring it home, boys.
Rob, you go first, and I'll round it out.
And this is you've got who's, 4 minutes, who's, 50 who's, seconds.
Who's right, podcast?
Rob, we've got 2 minutes each. Do you want to?
Is it? Yeah. No. What was the question I asked? I
was
think
to
that.
Say to, yeah.
Yeah. No.
Yeah,
I
what
think
was the question I asked? I think that
let me just give some opinions about just things in general. So no, listen. I think it's great that people are still listening to the music if they are doing that. And like Chris said, if we do get to do a gig in the future again, that would be fantastic. I think, you know, I personally had a great time and met a lot of interesting, cool people. You know, especially you lads in the band. Which I hope when we can all stay in contact with, even if we do or do not do music into the future, because I think you guys are great. But outside of that, just I think the music itself was quite good, you know, and I think that
it was
it definitely represented a part of us at that specific time in our lives. And the fact that we got the opportunity to record it and play it and people, I think, was pretty special. So I think that was all great. And I'm not too, I guess, precious about it. Like, I don't mind if we ruin that. Like, I think it would be great if we did more music, but I think what we have done is great.
Okay.
Very well said.
Yeah, very well said. It was nice. I'm very, very grateful for what happened. And I think it has, there's no question that has left an indelible mark on who I am. It was a formative experience as far as I'm concerned. I'm extremely grateful to know the three of you, and I'm very grateful to count you among my friends, and I do love and appreciate you all. And yeah, I think it was a really, really, really special thing, actually. I'm glad, and I'm also, I have some optimism and even some excitement about what we might even do in the future. And I'm not saying that it has to be anything too serious, and I think the likelihood is that it won't be anything too serious. But yeah, I think it was important. I think it was an important part of my life, and I'm sure it had a profound effect on all of us. And not to make too big a deal of it, or even to make too fine a point of anything, but yeah, I think it was cool. Yeah, and that was it. And yeah, and it was a blessing, and it's one of the things that I count myself grateful for in my life.
I totally agree with that. And I will just add as well that I heard what everybody said about me when I was in the bathroom about the window situation. And you know, and I'm just gonna say before we run out of time that I'm not okay with that. I'm not okay with it, and you know, I'm a bit upset about the whole thing. So you know, fuck you guys.
You've been listening to Making It Make Sense, the podcast from Real Fear Records. This concludes our two-part Dry Roasted Peanuts retrospective reunion special. Join us next time for something.